continuing with disc two.
This one's not good vibes. This one's very bad vibes. Where was this one? Well, that was that place you were walking down some street and you were totally afraid. You didn't know where you were and you got concerned and all of a sudden you felt the energy disappeared from your body. What happened? The energy in the field was not in harmony with you. You put the two together and it's cancellation. It's also what the gazelle feels when the lion comes in the field. Why? Cancellation, predator-prey relationship. I want to try this. The first thing I'm going to show it so I can see if it works. I'm going to show you a dynamic expression of this. Here's how it works. There's two waves, red and blue, and the black line is a composite of adding them up. So you can see in this particular case, the two waves, when they're in phase with each other, the composite is constructively interference, a greater height and a greater depth. You see, composite, constructive interference. But now I'm going to make it active. And when I make it active, what you're going to see is the waves are now separating. The blue is standing still. The red is moving. When they're out of phase, look at the flat line. That's destructive interference. So watch it dynamically. As one wave stands still and the other moves, then you can see it. Sometimes they're in harmony and the black collective is much greater. Sometimes they're out of phase and the black is flat. And you're seeing a dynamic interference pattern of constructive and destructive interference as it goes through that. I still got a couple of minutes. I know that, okay? Or should I give you the break? Okay, I'm going to give you the break. 15 minutes. I am starting some stuff in here. Please come back. Okay, I'm going to go quickly because there's so much great stuff. Okay, but you can hear quickly, so here it goes. This is a picture of a gold atom. And you can see it right here. And if you clean up the image, that's what it looks like. So you can say, oh yeah, but I can see atoms, so they must be matter. And the reality is, here's a fact. I give you a camera and shrink you down to that size, let you fly through the atom, shoot pictures from one side to the other side, come back, develop the film. There will be absolutely nothing on the film. You will not see electrons, you will not see protons, you will not see neutrons. Why? Because our model of the atom is wrong. When you and I went to school, this was the solar system atom model. Marbles, ball bearings, and all this stuff. This is the actual picture of the quantum atom, and there's nothing wrong with this slide. The atom is made out of energy. And then you can say, yeah, but if the atom is made out of energy, then why can't I put my hand through this podium? And the answer is, it's not because it's solid. It's because of this. Atoms are like miniature vortices of energy, like tornadoes. So imagine this tornado is happening, and I ask you to drive your car 100 miles an hour at the base of this tornado. When you hit that tornado, will your car drive through the tornado, yes or no? No, it'll be the same as hitting a stone wall. And I say, yeah, but oh, I can see that tornado. No, take the dust and the dirt out of that tornado. It looks like this. Now I ask you, take your car, drive 100 miles an hour to this point, and you'll be driving right across that open field, and boom! You'd be smashing into a stone wall even though you didn't see it. I really know that the birds that hit my picture window had that same feeling at that moment. The reality is, what's important point is this. Atoms are vortices of energy. And as vortices of energy, they have a force field. I can't put my hand through here, not because it's physical, but because every atom is a miniature tornado of force in it, and you can't push through that force field. But atoms are spinning like that tornado, but here's something very important. All atoms have an equal number of positive and negative charges, meaning they have an equal number of protons as they have electrons. All atoms are neutral, but the electrons are not evenly distributed. So when you look at this, I might have more electrons on the right side than on the left side because of the distribution of the electrons in the shells. Point, if I then take a voltmeter and put it over here, it'll read negative. If I take a voltmeter and move it on this side, it'll read positive. If I put a voltmeter in between the two, the voltmeter will read neutral. Does that make sense? Okay, but since the atom is spinning, I don't have to move the voltmeter. What I do is watch the atom spin. We'll make red and blue as positive and negative, and then I put a voltmeter right over here and get a reading, and as you watch the atom spin, watch the voltmeter. It's reading the positive and negative charges coming off the atom. Now make a recording of that, and all of a sudden you say, look what you're reading. An atom is a wave function. It's waves of positive and negative radiating out from a generator. An atom is a generator sending charge out. Why is that relevant? And the answer is we're used to looking at atoms as physical molecules, or subunits of atoms, and it turns out now atoms are energy fields that are generators generating a current across this place. Every atom can be identified by its particular electromagnetic field associated with it. So when we look at an atom, it's something like the ripples here, except the atom is in the center. An atom is a vortex in the center that is generating ripples. So wherever there are atoms, they're generating ripples all over the place. Are you made out of atoms? And the answer is, of course. Is the edge of your body the edge of you? No. You are completely generating a field around you, which gets you connected to everybody else in the field. The chair you're sitting in? Got a field to it. The podium's got a field. The flower's got a field. How you put the pieces in your life, feng shui, is how you can change the field to enhance you through constructive or change you through destructive interference to adjust your energy. Why? Because the waves of that interact with the waves of this. Waves interact, interference, constructive and destructive interference. You go into somebody's house with kind of weird interior in there, you know, you don't know this person, you walk in there and you can go, you can feel the energy suck out of you if the room isn't right. And so the reality is your environment is shaping your expression in the environment at all times. When we talk about Newtonian physics, we look at atoms like marbles or billiard balls that hit each other. Well, that's really cool, except it's not real. The atoms are not marbles and ball bearings. The atoms are energy fields. So rather than looking at them in Newtonian physics, I look at it in quantum physics. Now it looks like this. And why is that relevant? Because then we talk about the interaction in this thing as a result of the interaction of the fields, not their atoms in there, they're fields. Atoms are fields. And all of a sudden then we can talk about what? Constructive and destructive interference. And that's what shapes the world we're in. Your body is shaped by it, and the world is shaped by the constructive and destructive interference. Collectively, all of the ripples in the giant pond that we live in are collectively called the field. You live in a field of waves from everything going everywhere and interfering with each other in this particular regard. So while we look at people and see an image like this, this is an illusion. That's light reflecting off the tornado. What do these people really look like? They look like that. And they're all entangled. Why? Because their field isn't at the edge of their skin. The field radiates out. So you influence wherever you're going in the entire field. And this becomes a whole different way of looking at life rather than focusing on matter. Now comes this beautiful and ultimately simplistic understanding. Very big experiment. Rupert was looking for inexpensive experiments when he stepped out of the system. I stepped out of the system. This is my most expensive experiment. This are iron filings. So I bought a piece of iron and a file, filed it up, made a pile of iron dust, put it in a salt shaker, and sprinkled it on a piece of paper. Every time I sprinkle the iron filings, random pile of iron filings. Do it 1,000 times, 1,000 random piles of iron filings. Every now and then, of course, a clump of filings may take on a shape, and you say, you know, that looks like a fish on a bicycle or something like that. That's called a Rorschach test. It's not really there. It's random. But here comes the more expensive part of the experiment. Before I sprinkle it, the next time I buy a magnet, and I put this under the paper. Now when I sprinkle the iron filings, do they fall randomly, yes or no? No, they form what? Ah, the magnetic field. If I throw away these filings and sprinkle it again, what do you think I'm going to get? This is so simple and so profound. Stop and think about this. The structure of these iron filings is not due to the iron filings. It's matter plus field equals structure. If you take away the magnetic field, you lose the structure, even though you got all the iron filings. Now think of this question in your head. If you saw this image, but you didn't know the magnet existed, you don't know the magnet's there, and you see these filings, you say, why do the iron filings form this thing? So you study the iron filings. Take apart the iron filings and study the filings. Will you find the pattern built into the filings, yes or no? The human body, the cells, are like iron filings. You want to look at the structure of the body and health and disease? You can study the cells all you want. You're looking at the filings. The cells are shaped by the field. This is where Rupert's work gets very critical. It's a field, a morphic field, in a sense, of shaping the matter in this particular case. Now, well, that sounds really simple. Here's an even a simpler point, and it comes from Albert Einstein. Einstein wrote, "The field is the sole governing agency of the particle," meaning the iron filings are not governed by themselves, they're governed by the field. The particle is matter. The field shapes matter. If you don't understand the field, you can't understand the expression of matter. If you look at a human as matter and you don't see the field that they live in, you can never understand by looking at their genes or whatever it is why they have that particular shape or structure or function. The relevance about all that comes full circle in a little bit, as we'll see, when we recognize, of course, that the particles are matter in this particular case. And the relevance about that is this. This is just an example of a paper. It's a paper that's on the left-hand side, written in scientific Latin. You can't understand it. I'll tell you what it's about. Popfristic and Goodman were trying to study the movement of a molecule they call turnstiles, like this, like molecular turnstile. And they wanted to, you know, what science is based on, predictability. So they said, if you could predict the intermediate stages of movement, then you could understand the movement because you could predict it. So they applied quantum mechanics to try to study why this thing folds and moves in this particular way. The results were they could never predict the movement. It was impossible to predict the movement. Then they went to the quantum mechanics. Unfortunately, the slide got ahead of me on this, so I can't back it up. But there's a review of this paper by Popfristic and Goodman about studying how molecules change shape. And well, you can't read it over here, just read it, the thing. What are the forces that control the twisting and folding of molecules into complex shapes? Don't look for the answers in your organic chemistry textbook. That's what it says. And you might say, well, what does that mean? It says, if you want to understand how molecules move, don't look in your organic chemistry book because that's based on Newtonian physics. And then you might say, but what's that have to do with me? Medicine is built on the principles of organic chemistry. And therefore, if you want to understand how life works, according to Weinhold, don't look in organic chemistry and don't ask medicine. Because medicine doesn't understand either because it's using the wrong science. Why? It's quantum fields. The field changes the protein. It's not mechanical things like physical molecules. So biology's got the whole thing wrong. Information is not in the substance. Information is in the field. It's not in the chemistry. So we go back to our building here and we say, you know, this is the way we look at life. But guess what? Everything is changing. There's a new mathematics, and I don't know if we'll have enough time. I'm trying to go fast enough to talk about fractal mathematics because this is how patterns occur in nature. And this mathematics shapes the mechanical world, but it's not Newtonian physics, it's quantum physics. So we changed the physics. That changed 100 years ago. Chemistry changed not that long ago because now we're really doing more electrochemistry, vibration and field changes. Here's the catch. Biology and psychology, still Newtonian. Point, they are not scientific by definition. Why? They don't understand the field. They don't understand the invisible forces. And therefore, they left out the most important shaping character of the world that we live in. It's the invisible stuff. So why this is interesting? Because I said when we took on Newtonian physics, we left the body, threw away the mind. Yeah, but now when we put quantum mechanics and quantum physics back into it, guess what it does? It not only reinstates the mind, but more, it does this. It puts the mind back with the body, and you add this thing, the field is the sole governing agency of the particle, which in this sense means the mind is the sole governing agency of the body. We've thrown the mind out, and it turns out the mind was the field that gave shape to the entire body in the first place. So your mind is shaping your life. Well, this becomes interesting because then we talk about it and we say, well, how does it work? It goes like this. There are signals that come from both the internal and the external world. Yeah, but what picks them up? The brain. What's the function of the brain? Perception. Read the world. Tell me what's going on. Yeah, but when you read the perception, then what do you do with those perceptions? Ah, it goes up to the mind. The mind interprets those perceptions and its response. And when the mind makes a response, it sends its information back to the brain, which then sends the information to the cells to control behavior and gene activity. The relevance about all this is that the mind is an integral part in shaping the response to the perceptions that we got. And this changes everything in this regard. Look at it this way. Here's an orchestra. In this orchestra, we can subdivide it. We can subdivide it into the different groupings of instruments, the strings, the violins, the woodwinds, the horns and the percussion, the vocalists and all that. And then we can talk about who? The conductor. The conductor makes sure that all these sections are working in harmony with communing with each other. Yeah, but what is the conductor basing it on? The score. The score is how the conductor reads this information, conducts this symphony to make that. Connection? Here's what the connection is. The connection is the orchestra is your physiology. Instead of strings and violins, it represents the body. So the body, the orchestra is what? Digestive system, respiratory system, nervous system, reproductive, excretory, immune, etc. Those are the subdivisions of the orchestra. Yeah, but who controls it? The conductor. Yeah, but who's the conductor? The brain. The brain's the conductor. Yeah, but what's it conducting to? Ah, the score. Yeah, but what's the score? That's the mind. Your mind is then used, the information is used by the brain to give shape to your body so that you start to realize that your mind, in a sense, is then the controlling field behind this, and you write a score. You write a score for your life, and that becomes part of your development. So how do you write the score? Well, you've got two parts to your mind. And the two fundamental parts of the mind are this. The main body of the mind, 90% or more of the physical nature of the brain, is what is called the subconscious. It was there before consciousness evolved. It was there before what we're going to talk about, the prefrontal cortex evolved to give rise to consciousness. Then the subconscious represents the brain before consciousness, which is essentially the whole brain. It can process 40 million bits of data per second. This is from Noren Trender's, the references in my book. It's on the website as well. And by looking at the nerve connections and the nerve inputs and the responses, it says that the subconscious mind can respond to 40 million nerve inputs every second. And in that 1 second, process it and then create an habitual response as a result of processing that information. So this is the nature of the subconscious mind. The original brain processes 40 million bits per second, but here's the character. It is totally habitual. The subconscious is not creative. It learns a program, it will repeat that program forever and ever and ever until you change the program. But the second part of the brain is what evolved over time, and it came from what is called the prefrontal cortex, the very front part of the brain, the latest stage of our evolution. And this is providing feedback. That's what consciousness does. Consciousness gets you an opportunity to look back at yourself in the setting of the world that you're living in. So consciousness is like an eye looking backwards to see how you're doing in the world that you're living in. It is derived from the consciousness from the prefrontal cortex. I call it an add-on option because most people in this world do not actually exercise that option. But look at the data. It can process only 40 bits of data per second. It's very slow when it's processing, but it's creative. And that's where the difference comes from. It's creative. So the nature is this. You've got these two minds interacting all the time. But the important understanding is this, is that this one is a million times more powerful than consciousness is. The subconscious is a million times more powerful. So when we understand the nature of it, then we start to recognize something very important. Your beliefs feed back into your brain, and then your brain organizes your life according to that. Dr. Sheldrake brought up the concept of the placebo effect before. Having a positive thought can heal you even though you take a sugar pill. So let's just play a little bit about a placebo effect. This is on an audio. I hope the sound is up.
An example of the placebo effect was 350 years ago. English King Charles II is said to have cured 100,000 people during his reign simply by laying his hands on them. The power of the royal touch diminished with the coming of science. But until 50 years ago, doctors had few truly effective treatments to give their patients. The tea's historian is Harvard professor Ann Harrington.
There are some people who say that the history of medicine up until really rather recently is by and large the history of the placebo effect, that doctors relied a lot on the force of their personality and aura of being a healer, then they were able to rely on things they could pull out of their black bags.
In fact, the power of the placebo was not so recognized that medical catalogs sold placebos, pills of different sizes and colors, which contained nothing but chalk or sugar.
So the relevance of the placebo effect is simply this. If your belief system thinks you can get healthy because that's what its belief is, it will make you healthy whether you're using a sugar pill or a chalk pill. It doesn't mean anything in that regard. It's an emphasis of the fact that your power was in your mind, not in the drugs and the treatment or surgery. In many cases now recognize that even surgery has a placebo effect component to it. Okay? Well, I'm sure almost everybody in here has heard of the placebo effect. What about the nocebo effect? How many people are very familiar with that? Okay, a small percentage, but this is why it's important that everybody has to know this. Because the placebo effect is what? Healing myself through a positive thought. What if I'm entertaining negative thoughts? Well, they're just as powerful as positive thoughts. They just go in the opposite direction. It's called the nocebo effect. Let's hear about that.
Very important for people to know that words can powerfully affect their brains in ways that are beneficial or harmful. That if you tell people things that are negative about a medication, or you can communicate by body language or tone of voice that you really don't think this is going to work, but oh well, let's try it. And that could actually reduce the effectiveness of a powerful analgesic.
The placebo effect's evil twin, a big issue. Called nocebo, it can do much more than reduce the effectiveness of a drug. It may even have the power to kill. 20 years ago, at a hospital in Birmingham, England, patients with gastric cancer were divided into two groups. One group was given chemotherapy. The other group was told they were getting chemotherapy, but in reality, received a placebo. Incredibly, one-third of the patients in the placebo group suffered the side effects of real chemotherapy, including hair loss, as well as nausea.
The important understanding about this is, yes, positive thoughts can heal you, but negative thoughts can kill you. It works as, it's the power of thought that is the important thing. Then you realize from what psychologists tell us that 70% of our thoughts are negative and redundant. And all of a sudden, you can start to see what direction we're going to go in if thoughts are controlling the influence of your health, and you start to realize that 70% of your thoughts are not supporting you, then of course we're continuously undermining ourselves with nothing more than the beliefs that we hold in our mind about ourselves. And that becomes important because then it leads us to the, where the hell did you get those beliefs? And here's the interesting reality. You get beliefs, you were born with beliefs in the sense of instincts. You were born with the ability to swim. You were born with the ability to heal yourself. You were born with the ability to pull your hand out of the fire without having any previous learning experiences. You're given instincts when you come in. But that's just to get your machine running and off the ground. The rest of it is learned experiences. Now, here's an interesting understanding. If I put wires on your brain right now to read your EEG activity, I can find your EEG activity all over and up and down, all kinds of activities, high, low, all kinds of frequencies being involved in your brain. But here's something we now know about the development of children. When children develop, they don't develop with the full capacity to have all the brain functions that are going on in your head right now. Children ramp up over time, meaning between zero and before birth, actually, to two, the child is predominantly in delta, which is the lowest frequency in the brain, in the EEG. Delta, for us, is the equivalent of sleeping or unconscious. For a child, though, a child's not unconscious or sleeping. Here's the difference. A child's sensory inputs are developed before its motor outputs. So it can receive information, but it can't respond. So for the first 2 years, it's more like a child behind a plate glass window observing and downloading information, but not able to engage. When a child reaches two, and between two and six, it ramps up and its predominant EEG status is theta. Theta is a state of imagination. Yeah, that's where the kids play. They're mixing, you know, mud pies and riding brooms as horses. To them, it's as real as a horse, no doubt. They live in that world. Theta is imagination. By the age of 6 and after, they start expressing as a predominant wavelength alpha, which is calm consciousness. And by the time they reach 12, they start expressing a higher level called beta, which is focused schoolroom learning. The relevance about this is, look, if you see, this is very like important here. The child is not in a state of what we call consciousness until after 6 years of age. The first 6 years of its life, it's in a programmable state. These frequencies are equivalent to what is called the hypnagogic trance. That a child is in a trance for the first 6 years, downloading without modifying or judging, just downloading what it observes. It observes the parent's behavior, and the child learns everything the parent does. It watches and downloads it and learns it instantaneously. It's part of the life. During this period, it's very important that there's so much downloading has to go on that nature, it was important that nature didn't even bring consciousness into it. Why? Because if you're a child, you have to learn millions of facts just to participate in the community. If you were already conscious as an infant at this level back here, then downloading those facts would be interfered with because then you'd be questioning all kinds of things or, you know, using your own consciousness to alter it. No, nature didn't give you the consciousness. Said, nope, keep it away. This is a period of enculturation. This is where you got to learn the language. You can learn 3 languages at the same time before 6 years of age. And you could, this is where you learn all the rules of life. You study your mother and your father, and they become the prototype. Your kids and the kids in the family, sibling. You study them by observing them. You don't have to be taught. It's not teaching. The child just is downloading. And it's very interesting because the Jesuits were very proud of their reality. They would say, you give me a child until it's 6. It will belong to the church for the rest of its life. What did they know? Whatever programming goes on before 6 goes straight into the subconscious, and those are the programs that shape your life. Your consciousness doesn't even begin until this point over here. Relevance. Not only do you learn the rules to fit into life, but you learn who you are. And this is a period where you acquire self-identity. Well, who are you? Well, what did your parents tell you you were? What did the people around you tell you you were? Did they tell you that you were the most wonderful, perfect thing that ever landed on this planet and you can do anything in the world that you ever wanted? Probably not. This is the period of, you don't deserve that. You're not good enough for this. Who do you think you are? You ever hear any of those things? Parents say that? Why is it relevant? If the child is under 6, the child is not conscious enough to figure out what the parents are trying to say, but they are in a state where they download that. And that becomes the program. So our programs of what we live in our life are primarily seeded into us before 6, but we're not even conscious at that level yet. We're still trying to, you know, we're just downloading information. Interesting, you can learn 3 languages here. You try and teach a kid 1 new language over here, and guess what? It doesn't work very well. Why? Super learning. The first 6 years are super learning. You learn about the world, the conditions, your role in it, who you are, what you can do, and what you can't do. And those become your subconscious programs that then start you off on the rest of your life. And the issues about that, if we all go back, they're almost all disempowering kinds of programs. They take away from us because they want to teach us that we are not all super powerful human beings. We are just ordinary people. You're just an average kid. And when you start to recognize that these words are going into the child without filtration by consciousness, they're just going in and being downloaded, then they become the programs. And the relevance about this is these are the programs that shape the rest of our lives. And that children are not in a state of understanding what the parents are saying. So, for example, you've been in a supermarket or store or someplace where a family's pushing a cart around and some kid in the family is throwing a tantrum, a fit, because I want that toy. You've seen that, right? Throwing and screaming, and the parents are like, just shut the kid up and let's get out of here. So what do they say? Something like, well, you don't deserve that, Billy. Now, I want you to just hold on to this thought, because now Billy's under 6. What did Billy just do? Download what? An identity, I do not deserve, okay? This becomes the program that was built in. It wasn't Billy's choice to understand it. You wait, you come back. If Billy's 9 years old and throws the same fit in the store and his parents say, you don't deserve that, now he's got a different belief system. Because by now, with enough consciousness, you can say, oh yeah, they want to go home, I'm being a pain in the ass, and they want me to be quiet, I got it, I'll shut up, maybe. Okay, and so the point about it is that what happens is that consciousness not being there then takes everything as a literal translation to be downloaded as a fact. You need, you can't heal yourself. You have to go to the doctor for that. Who do you think you are? These are the kinds of things that get downloaded into belief. This becomes a subconscious. And the relevance about that is that these programs stay in that subconscious mind. And the significance about that comes over time when we start to realize this simple fact, which is in this article, so I use this picture to illustrate it, how your unconscious really shapes your decision. What does it say? Look at this fact. According to cognitive neuroscientists, we are conscious of only about 5% of our cognitive activity. Stop. That means on a day-by-day basis, you're only conscious of 5% of your action in the world outside. That 95% of your behavior is being driven by the subconscious mind. Where does it get the program? Well, it got downloaded with programs. Now, here's the problem. The conscious and the subconscious work in tandem with each other. Whatever the conscious focuses on, it can control. Conscious can control things that we used to think were involuntary. Conscious can control your blood pressure. Consciousness can control your heart rate, your body temperature. It can control anything it focuses on. But whatever it's not focused on, then the job of handling the issue is then left to the subconscious. So the conscious can focus and control anything, but when the conscious isn't focusing on it, then it's controlled by the subconscious. Does that make sense so far? But then here's the problem. The conscious is your personal identity, your personal self, and that's like connected to your spiritual self, which we'll talk about in a minute. Those are your wants, your wishes, your desires, what you want from life. Then realize this. On a day-by-day basis, you're only operating about 5% of the day toward getting what you want out of life. Yeah, but then if what's the other 95%? Oh, the other 95% is the subconscious. Yeah, where'd those programs come from? You, yes or no? They came from other people. Problem? What if those other people don't have the same thing that you want in your life? What if their lives are dysfunctional? What is your life? A replica of their life. Do you see it? Here's the problem. No. Why not? Because very infrequently, you can look back and catch it. That's the big problem when you catch it sometimes. Most of the times you don't see it. Why? Because your mind gets busy, starts thinking about tomorrow, last week. What are you doing tonight? A problem, whatever you're working on. If your conscious mind is working on a problem or not being present at the moment, then by definition, the moment is being controlled by the subconscious mind. Does that make sense? Yeah, but the subconscious mind got programs that were downloaded from other people. May not have anything you want in it. It may have all those other things that you don't deserve and stuff like that. Relevance. Little Billy, who was in that store, 6 years old, 5 years old, got told, you don't deserve stuff. He's 40 years old. He's in a room back in a small little office in the back of a big plant. And he's thinking to himself, he says, I'm far better than this job. I should be leading this whole section. I should be in charge of this thing. I'm much more intelligent than that. Which mind is he thinking that with, conscious or subconscious? Well, he's thinking that with his subconscious mind, and he's doing his job on the desk. Who's then managing the job on the desk? What's the subconscious program? That he's successful and a leader and all that stuff? No, he doesn't deserve. Now, here's the catch. The function of the brain is to make coherence between the program and the reality. If you've got a program that says you do not deserve, the function of the brain is to make sure you do not deserve. And it will sabotage you. Did you see it? No. Why? Because your conscious was usually engaged and 95% of the day you're running from the subconscious mind. The story that fits this, and I really think about it this way because it's a humorous thing, but it makes sense out of it. You know somebody and you know their parent. And that you see this person, you realize that this person's behavior is a replica of their parents. They're the same people. So you volunteer and say, you know, Mary, you're just like your mom. back away from Mary. You already know why. Mary's going to go like, what are you talking? How can you say that? No, there's a funny joke in here. The joke is this. How come everybody else can see that Mary is behaving like her mom, but Mary doesn't? Because she's operating from her subconscious mind where she got the program from her mom. And when she's operating from that, it's because her conscious mind's not paying attention. So she doesn't see it. Point, you do not see generally your subconscious behavior because your conscious is busy, and that's why you have the subconscious behavior controlling it. I'll give you one quick example, if that didn't work for you. You learn how to drive a car. The first day you got in a car, you didn't know how to drive a car. You drove a car with consciousness. Yeah, and some people, it was, you know, the 40-bit processor wasn't even capable of handling all the mirrors and the gauges and the people and the guy yelling at you trying to drive. Some people freeze, can't drive the car. That was the beginning days when you were learning. Now you know how to drive a car. And you get in your car and a friend gets in the passenger seat and you start driving down the road. You get involved with a conversation. Has anybody ever driven a car and gotten a conversation? Say yes or no. Now here's the issue. Conversation's really good. You get into it and at some point about 10 minutes down the road, you look out the window in a pause moment and you realize, huh, I haven't paid attention to the road for the last 10 minutes. I'm sure you don't tell that to the passenger, you know. But the reality is it just come upon you. You did not pay attention because you were aware it's your conscious mind in the conversation. Now here's the catch. Well, during that 10 minutes when you're having a conversation, please describe your driving behavior. You go, well, I didn't see it. I was involved. And it's like, aha, that was the point. When your conscious mind's involved, it does not reflect on its own subconscious behavior. And this creates a big problem because 95% of your behavior comes from that programming, and most of that programming came from other people. You can sabotage your entire life, and you weren't running it yourself because your mind was thinking about all the things you wanted to have. And while it was thinking, you were then going down the drain using the program you got from the subconscious that you cannot see. It operates 95% of the day with a processor that's a million times more powerful than the conscious processor. And then you might say, okay, well, let's use some positive thinking. Okay, now I ask you a quick question. Which part of the mind does positive thinking come from? Oh, I pushed the button too soon. Conscious mind. It operates at 5% of the day with a 40-bit processor. And while you're having positive thoughts, who's running the show? Oh, the experiential programs that you got, which are in your subconscious mind, and guess what? They're operating 95% of the day with a 40 million bit processor, and you then have to do something simple called do the math. How's that positive thinking going to handle? It's not going to be very effective. And the reason why is because this one is running most of the time. Unless you use willpower, and that means you kept your eye on that ball so much you didn't take your eye off the ball. Some people get on a diet with total willpower. They get down to that weight level, take their eye off the ball, and then return right back to the weight level they were before. Why? The weight level is set in the subconscious. And the issue then becomes very critical for you because it starts to recognize, while you think you are running your life, the invisible part is running your life, and the invisible part is not your program. You got that from other people. And then you say, huh, what does that mean? Am I doomed? No. You can rewrite the program. But here's the problem. There is nobody in the subconscious mind. It is a tape recorder with a playback. It's all it is. Relevance? So you're talking to yourself, well, okay, don't do that anymore, Bruce. Come on, you're better now. I'm talking to myself, right? Oh, guess what? It doesn't get any better. Then I get mad at myself. God damn it, you can't do it. And then after that doesn't work, then I finally ask God. I go, God, I can't change it. You change it. And the reality is this. The tape player is a tape player. Give you an analogy, the tape player. Put a cassette in your tape player, push play, listen to the program. You don't like the program, go up and talk to the tape player. Go ahead, play something different. I don't really want to hear that. Can you play something different? God, can you make this thing play something different down here? What's the point? If there's nobody in there, then talking to it doesn't make any difference. And it gets very frustrating, doesn't it? And here's the other reality. Then it means that you actually then have to take what you know in your conscious mind and put it into play in your subconscious mind. My perfect example is me in this particular case. As I mentioned during the break, I knew this stuff a long time ago, not the subconscious stuff, about how perceptions control life. And then I started to go out and talk to people because I couldn't wait to tell them. It's like, oh, genes don't control life. Perceptions control life. You can, if you understand this, if you understand the stuff I'm talking about, you create the most fabulous life on this planet. People in the audience look up at me and cock their heads a little bit and go, for a guy who says he knows all this stuff, Lipton, your life doesn't look that good, you know. I then heard myself say the unmentionable words of, well, do as I say, not as I do. But I realize, and this is very critical, because there's a tendency for people to treat knowledge learning like pills. If I hear the right knowledge, I will be better. And the fact is, no, I already had all the knowledge. I was not better. It was applying the knowledge that made all the difference. Hearing the knowledge is good. Applying the knowledge is what makes it work. If you just talk about this stuff and don't do anything, you're still playing from the same subconscious programs. And the answer is, can you change them? Yes, I'll talk about that in 1 second. But there's another way out of it. And I really want you to know something, because you were there. I would suggest that almost everybody in this room ran their lives at one point exactly the way they wanted to run it. And it was fabulous and beautiful. It was the day you fell in love with somebody. What was different about that day versus the day before? And the answer is this. Day before, how long did it take you to get dressed in the morning? Like 5-7 minutes, you got your clothes on, you're out the door. How about eating? Oh, I went to McDonald's, scarfed down a burger, wiped my face with my sleeve. I was out of there in less than 10 minutes. And now I say, today you're going to go on a date. You just met this person. You're going to go on a date. How long does it take you to get dressed? Probably more than 5 minutes. You go to that restaurant. First time in your life, you know what every one of those pieces of silverware is for, even the ones on top of the plate, to the right, to the left. You know everything. You start eating, guess what? You're not talking with food in your mouth for the first time in your life. You start using a napkin and blot your face. You think of the words before you say them. What was different this day than the day before? You were not relying on the program. You said, I'm going to be self-reflective. I want to be the best person to represent myself to this. I want to sell myself to this person. I'm not leaving anything to chance. My zipper closed. Yep, cool. That's good. That's a good start. And the issue about this is, you were not running from the subconscious mind. You were running from the conscious mind. And when you were running from the conscious mind, your life fit the vision that you have in your conscious mind. You were in love, you weren't sick, you had more energy, you knew what to do with it that time. Everything was working great. The day before, you could have hated your job and your life and everything, but today, the world is beautiful. What's the difference? Today you're running from consciousness and not from the tapes. When you run from consciousness, then your life is the miracle of love. I call this the honeymoon effect. The problem is the honeymoon wears out. Why did it wear out? And the answer goes like this. Down now, after you've won this person over, and you've been putting off a lot of things about life, but now things start coming back into your life. Oh my God, I got my job. I got to get some money, pay for all these things. And you start thinking in your conscious mind about, what am I going to do, all these things? And your loving partner comes up to you with a great romance, and you're thinking about something, and they ask you a simple question, and you turn around, and you rah, 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 rah. And they look at you, go, who are you? I've never seen this person before. Matter of fact, no, you didn't. But here's the catch. When that spouse of yours says that to you, they say, who are you? And you're thinking, I've always been this way. What are you talking about? Did you see what you said? Yes or no? No. Why? Because your mind was engaged in thinking. Your response was the way your father talked to your mother. And all of a sudden, that's when the honeymoon breaks down. Because if you start then operating from the tapes, then you're playing somebody else, not the person you've been, that you were in that conscious period. It's a live example of saying your life can be absolutely perfect as long as you're being conscious, but the moment you lose that that control of consciousness, then you automatically are playing somebody else's life and it doesn't begin to work. And is this the life that says you were not good enough, not smart enough, not healthy? You're a sickly child. That's a belief, that's a program. What's the brain going to do? Coherence. Between the program and the belief, they're going to both be the same. And the issues are, this is what happens. Can I talk to my subconscious mind? Yeah, but it's not very efficient. It doesn't work very well that way. Okay? So what else can you do about it? You can reprogram it. You can learn how to push the record button. There are a variety of ways of doing it. Clinical hypnotherapy is one. And a whole field of new energy psychology modalities. EFT, EMDR, body talk, avatar, holographic reprogramming, Psych-K. Go to my website. Under resources for programming, you can look these all up, identify them, and see what might be your best one. Issue is this. If you're going to insist on talking to yourself, it's not going to be very effective because you're not talking to an entity. There is no one in the subconscious. It's just a record playback device. And so therefore, you have to learn how to push the record button, yet you can change it. Some of the energy modality ones, 10 minutes. Change a program that has limited you your entire life. Because once you know how to push the record button, then the download is fast. If you don't know how to push the record button, then it's a hit and miss proposition or may not work. So my last point, which is not, I have like 8 more hours, but we're running out. I want to talk about something that was really cool because I was not a spiritual person. I didn't believe in spirituality. That's why I went into science. I got into materiality. You know, it's the material stuff. It's what I was looking at. But then something came across me when I started understanding the nature of the membrane, how the cell worked. And here's the first fact that came to my head. There are no two people the same. You say, well, how do you know that? I say, okay, take your cells and put them into somebody else. I don't care who you find to put them into. Their system will treat your cells as not self and reject them. That's what the immune system will do. Not self, foreign tissue, get rid of it. So that if you do this, you'll find that there's no two people that can accept each other's grafts because no two people are the same. My question was, where is the difference between two people? What makes two people different than each other? So I start with two cells that are the same. Why? Because two liver cells, it could be two brain cells, two muscle cells, I don't care which, two identical cells for this reason. If it's a liver cell, 90-some percent of the cell is involved with liver function. The same 90% of this cell is involved with liver function. It doesn't make a difference whose liver cell it is. Both liver cell functions are exactly the same. But this is not the same cell as the other. This is Bruce's liver cell. This is Margaret's liver cell. So I know they're different. How do I know? Put my cell into Margaret's body, rejected as not self. Put Margaret's cell into my body, rejected, not self. Does that make sense so far? Cool. Where's the self? I will now remove the color from everything that's the same and hopefully reveal where are the differences between two people. And I remove the color and boom. The differences between two people are these structures in the cell membrane. And these structures are facing the outside of the cell, not the inside. And what are these structures called? Well, they're called receptors. They're receiving something. Medicine studies a small cohort of these receptors. What do they call the group that they study? They call them self-receptors. What do you think a self-receptor receives? Self? Where is that self that the self-receptor is trying to receive? What do you think from just looking at the picture? Inside or outside? Outside, yeah, the receptors are reading the outside. There's something outside the cell that it reads. Point, I could take my self-receptors off my cell. Now it has no identity. It's a generic liver cell. I can put it into anybody. I can put it in any one of you right now, that cell, you would never reject it. Why? It has no identity to it. It's called liver cell. Not Bruce's liver cell, liver cell. But I go to Margaret's liver cell, take her receptors off of her cell, put them onto my cell. Whose cell is this now? It's Margaret's cell. Why? If I put it back in my own body, I'll reject that cell. And if I take my cell with her receptor and put it into her body, she accepts it. I can transfer the ownership. And the point that gets critical is that the receptors are reading the exterior environment, that there's some signal out there. And I said, well, where's that signal coming from? What do you think it's coming from? So I said, well, let's just suggest something. Let's suggest that the membranes are opaque, just for a second, meaning no light can get through them. If I put the cells in white light, what color will be in the inside of the cell? If no light can get in, what color's inside the cell? It's dark. Nothing gets in there. Okay, now here's the joke part. Let's take the self-receptors and make them into sunglasses so they transmit light, right? What color is going to be inside of my cell and what color is going to be inside of Margaret's cell? What color is in mine? And Margaret's? Cool, look, you got the answer right. Quick question, though. Where'd the green come from? Outside. Where'd the red come from? The point about it is we came from all that is, the outside, the field. We're part of the field. Whatever you want to call it, field, divine matrix, all that is, God, I don't care whatever you want to call it. We are out there as identities. We play through the receptors. So my spirit, as I would call it, is different than Margaret's spirit, but where we both came from what? The white light. We both are out here playing through the cells. And so that we're not even in these bodies. You're out somewhere. I don't know where you are. That's what my mom always said. She said, where the hell are you? Anyway, but and the reality is that's why this is important is because each of us is a piece of the white light. We are part of a whole that is fragmented by its ability to be separated into the cell. But it didn't arise within the cell. It played through the cell. And the relevance about that is indicated. Anybody remember this? An English group, Rupert. What's the point? It's called refraction. You take white light, run it through a prism, and the rainbow spectrum comes out the other side, right? If I take the rainbow spectrum and push it through the prism, what comes back out the other side? White light. But now let's say today we don't like somebody particular, okay? And we all vote, throw Mr. X out of the group. We take that frequency and throw it out of the group. Question. I take the remaining frequencies and run it through the prism. Do I get white light out the other side, yes or no? I see this as a message for us, is that we've been waiting for the white light to come back to the planet. And we were always told the white light was always here. We are all the white light. And the reality of the lesson is what we have to learn in our evolution at this moment is that we're all cells in a giant body called humanity. And until we get this picture straight, we are causing autoimmune disease in humanity. We're self-destructive. And all of a sudden I would say to you, well, if you have biases and you don't like some cells, tell me which organ do you want to throw away from your body? Just pick one organ and we'll throw it out of your body. And you say, why would I do that? Why would I throw somebody out? Because we don't understand each other, because our subconscious minds have been programmed with fallacious information. When you start to see Israeli kids with magic markers writing on bombs that they're going to drop on Palestinians, and you see Palestinian little kids dressed up in uniform with guns to go kill the Israelis, and these kids are 5, 6 years old, what are we programming in that subconscious mind? And what's the issue? The wars that we're fighting there are the same wars for several thousand years that have been propagated from one generation to the next generation. We don't even know who the hell started the war anymore. And the issue is we all must start with the children and start to give them an education, and in our own personal lives recognize this. Built into you are self-sabotaging beliefs about who you think you are, your place in the world, your powers, your abilities, and the idea of the subconscious mind is to make coherence between the program and your life. And if you have self-sabotaging beliefs in your subconscious, you will manifest them in your life. And you will sabotage yourself and destroy yourself and then go back and ask this question. Will you see it happen? No. It's the invisible. And my whole catch is this. We operate with the belief we are controlling our lives. And when things don't turn out, we blame the universe for not providing for us. And reason why that's a problem, almost inevitably we sabotaged our own lives with our subconscious programming we got from other people. We don't see it. It's invisible. And therefore, it's not our fault. And until we learn personal responsibility, there is no evolution on this planet. And why you're here is because you're obviously part of this new thing that's going on right now. I've run out of time for the fractal part of my story, But the beautiful part about the fractal part is this. It's a geometry that says that the images are repetitive at any level of the structure. And that's why if I talk about a cell, I can tell you about a human. Why? A human is a cell enlarged. We are cells just as much as the individual cells in our body are individual units of us. And that human society is a living organism that is a multicellular organism, and we are the cells in the body of humanity. And that this whole level goes up and up like this. We're at a stage of evolution. I can't give you the whole slide story to it, but I'll just tell you exactly where we are. Civilization is an animal evolving. And because of fractal self-similar patterns, then human evolution would be redundant or self-similar to the evolution of animals. Animals went from fish, amphibians, reptiles, birds, and mammals in the vertebrate level. Human culture started at the vertebrate level with mariculture, people that traveled around the edge and just, you know, took care of whatever was the immediate surface around the edge. Then we went from fish to amphibian. Amphibians, animals that left the water and took the water with them onto the land. That's when we went from mariculture to agriculture. And then at some point, from amphibians came reptiles. Reptiles are like machines. They're mechanical. You can look at them. They're almost digital the way they flip their eyes and shoot their tongues out. They're digital like machines. They're the machine age. So when we hit the reptilian phase of human society, we went from small little reptiles like mom and pop businesses to dinosaur reptiles, which are corporations. The corporation phase is where we are right now. And the issue about that is important because the dinosaurs gave rise to two other branches. First birds and then mammals. Okay, when was the bird phase of human civilization? When did it start? Wilbur and Orville Wright, okay? And when did it end? When was the highest evolution of the bird phase of human society? We landed on the moon in 1969. Most of us, of course, remember that. Well, 1969, some of us may not remember that. But do you remember they sent back an image of the Earth? And it was on that horizon? And all of a sudden we started to look at that little image of that blue-green thing up there. What did we start to say? That's all there is. We got to take care of this. Got to take care of the water. We got to take care of the air. We got to take care of the people. What is taking care? Nurturing. What is nurturing? The character of mammals. The nurturers were seeded in 1969. Now here's the problem. Mammals and dinosaurs were here at the same time. The mammals were the meek. The dinosaurs were the big lord over everything things. And then the dinosaurs crash and the meek take over the earth. Well, get ready, folks. The crash is happening. And it's interesting because where's it going to come from? Primarily, it's connected to this. Our reptilian society uses what fuel? We're using the blood of the dinosaurs to fuel a reptilian civilization that we have right now. But the blood's running out. And it's going to end. And when this ends, it gives rise for the mammals to take over as long as you don't connect yourself to the reptiles. And it's interesting because look at our government. It's run by the oil dinosaurs. They're running our lives, and the issue is they're due for a crash. It's not going to work. It does not sustain itself, and that the meek will inherit it. And I am assured everyone in this room is very much part of the mammalian meek. And why is that open for us? The future is ours. We just have to wait out the next few years as this is going on and detach from the dinosaur. Because if you don't detach from the dinosaur, when the dinosaur goes down, so do you. So the reality is we're in a stage of waking up to an evolution that's going to happen in a very few short years, and that we're going to walk through this. And how can you survive through it? And the answer is this. Reprogram your subconscious minds, because you're reprogramming. You can create anything you want out of your lives with the programs that you manifest. And you can have programs of love, harmony, support, community, abundance. These are programs which very much differ, I'm sure, from the fundamental programs we all got about limitation, scarcity, violence, and everything else. What's the point? We're evolving. And in this room right now, look around. You are the new mammals. And with that, I want to thank you, because you're doing this, you're thinking out of the box, you're coming from another way, gives us that future that we're looking for. And so I want to thank you, because we're going there and we're going to have a great time doing it. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks. Thanks. Okay. Thank you. Thank all of you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This concludes this session. For information regarding other sessions in this series, please call Avon at 1-800-810-TAPE.